Hi, everybody. I'm Michael Goodman with ArtMatcher, the mobile app which will bring innovation to the art industry and is coming to you soon. While we work hard to build and release this app, we'll be talking art with some of the industry's most interesting and knowledgeable people. Whether you're an art aficionado or this is all new to you, we'll be here to provide valuable insight and hilarious good stories. Hope you enjoy our chat today. Welcome to the Art Matcher podcast. My name is Michael Goodman. I have a special guest, friend, fellow LOXA alumni, Los Angeles County High School for the Arts, Alex Kupchak.
Hey, thanks, Michael.
Did I say your last name correctly?
You did.
Oh, thank God. You know, it's funny. Years ago, do you know my friend Josh?
I think so.
Josh Hashemzadeh?
The name sounds very familiar.
Well, it's interesting because early on when I was working with him, I didn't know how to say his last name and I completely butchered it on like this recording. So if you go onto YouTube, you can find that. Alex, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I was born in California. Both my parents are animators and they worked for many of the movies that shaped my childhood, you know, like Pocahontas, Hercules, that kind of stuff.
Wow, I didn't know that. I mean, your dad and your mom worked?
Yeah, they both worked on those films together.
Wow. I'm learning something about you every day.
Yeah, including many more. And I thought I wanted to be the animator like them for the longest time. But it wasn't really until LOXA where I kind of realized where I wanted to be.
And just for the audience, LOXA's, that's a school, Los Angeles County High School for the Arts. It's a very prestigious art school here on the West Coast in California.
Yeah, and it's like art half the day and then regular academics the other half. So I had six arts classes per week. And so I took animation classes as well as painting classes and stuff like that. And I took 2D animation and I was like, yeah, you know, this isn't really for me. I took 3D animation and then I was like, you know what? This is really not my thing. I'm not an animator. And I found that I was really the most happy and like really enjoying myself in my painting classes.
And you're a native here to California. You said, where did you grow up?
Sunland, California.
So. Sunland, California.
Yes.
Wow. I actually I know where that is, but I don't know. I've never been there. Funny enough, I've also been in California for over 10 years now.
Yeah. I mean, it's just north of Burbank. There's not much going on.
Yeah. That's is that near Simi Valley?
Simi Valley is kind of south and to the west.
He knows his geography better than I do.
Well, I know the area. It's literally just north of Burbank. It's just over north the mountains.
Of wow. And some people, well, Burbank is where all the studios are and all the fun stuff. So, wow. So you grew up in Sunland. When you were at LOXA, though, mm-hmm. were you commuting from there?
Oh, yeah. So I had a carpool of friends. So it was me, a jazz musician, a vocalist, and a classical violist. And we would go all the way from Sunland to, you know.
Did you guys take I'm going to let people know. So our school, we had different disciplines. We had visual arts, dancing, music. So it was a multi kind of arts school. And so you commuted with these other students who were in different disciplines. Did you guys take a train, a red line?
Well, sometimes it was a mix, right? So sometimes we would carpool all the way there. And then other times, well, actually, I guess before I was with them, I had to do trains and stuff. And sometimes on the way back, I would do a lot of trains. It's not an easy commute from somewhere.
No, it's amazing how all these students, myself included, you have these students come from all over the place to go to this school. I used to have to take the Amtrak early on, go to the station. And then it was until I discovered the red line. My parents, for some reason, were so freaked out of the subway that I only started taking the subway. I think it was sophomore or end of sophomore year because they were just the subway is completely sketchy, but the train's completely fine. Even though it's you still have people riding the train for free and gosh, when they would ticket, I'm not sure if you encountered when they would check for tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so archaic back then too. It was a hole punch. Now they had this is before, this is pre tapping, tap cards.
Oh my. Yeah. I mean, I remember. I mean,
you don't really think about it, but it's like, that's how old we are. Like, we were still when they were punching things. Like, that's a thing. But it's an amazing school. You have like, I think about how quickly you have to grow up to go to that school. I think it's only until after I graduated, I realized like the maturity level.
Oh my goodness.
That we were at.
Oh my goodness.
So when you like go to community college, you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Okay. So I went to Art Center College of Design recently. I just graduated in December.
Congrats.
Thank you. And as I was thinking about talking here today, my experience at Art Center, it's a rigorous, it's known as like one of the hardest programs. It's like, it's super breakback and some people don't survive it as an artist, you know?
And a very hard school to get into. I mean, they normally accept students who are older for that matter. I hear like you don't find too many people straight out of senior year getting in there.
That's true. They used to, the average age to enter used to be around 22, 23, but as time's gone on, they've started to lower and roll back the age. But yeah, I think that still holds true. It works better if you enter later. But anyways, so as I was thinking about it, it really, my time at Art Center really kind of reminded me of my time at Loxa, because I was doing the same things. There's all nighters at Loxa. I remember being in my bathroom drawing till 4 a.m. trying to just get my weekly sketches done for this class. Yeah, that was like a regular occurrence.
I was the student in painting class. I would show up to Barry Markowitz's class with a wet painting. And he just knew, he's like, you just worked on this before class. And I would think, I would be like, no, I didn't. Like, it's still, it was drying over last night as oil paint. That's why I always painted with oil. I was like, no, I'm not doing this acrylic stuff. Uh-huh. And it's funny, I didn't take, unfortunately, I did not take Loxa to like, I think everyone says this about high school is like, they wish they would have like, tried or done better if they were that student that didn't do well. But if I could do it all over again, it's like, wow. It's like, I'll tell you a funny story is when graduating Lux, I was going to San Francisco Art Institute.
Nice.
And it was me and Chris, we were in this class, in this painting class, and like the teacher is trying to like stump the students, like wherever you came from, you don't know art. And like they're asking like these basic art history questions, like, excellent, you know, Whistler's mother, and Chris and I are answering the questions like all correctly, like, okay, you guys are funny. You guys are in the grad program, just, you know, antagonizing the freshmen. Like, no, we're freshmen. Like, we learned this in high school. And they're like, huh? And I was like, wow, that's what kind of showed me how high of an art education we got there. I mean, we had some really good faculty. I mean, Miss Rush for history. Who is your favorite professor?
Oh, I could never do that to them.
Oh, you couldn't? You couldn't put them on blast?
No, I couldn't. I could never pick a favorite.
What was your favorite like class then, medium wise? I mean, that has nothing to do with the professor. It has to do with the...
Well, you know what? Here's what I will say. Miss Rush is an angel, and we had the greatest time in her class.
She already got an A for that. So, what was her last name? Just so the audience can know, or do you remember it? I don't remember.
Miss Rush?
Yeah. Something with an L. Well, her last name's Rush. Her first name, I guess.
Lori.
That's what it was. Lori Rush. Check her out wherever she is.
Yeah. I mean, that was fantastic. Barry Markowitz was the one who did a lot of drawing classes for me, and that was really hardworking, and I really developed a lot in his classes, though I hated it at the time. And David Schaffman as well was a really big inspiration of mine because that was a figure drawing class, but that wasn't as important as the way he cultivated the art spirit in this young students. I think about this a lot. Like, I feel like his class kind of really showed me how to be an artist and like the mindset to get into. He talked a lot about the artist ego as well as, you know, just really adult art concepts. You know, he brought that to us.
Yeah, the really conceptualizing fast of art and not only just looking at art kind of aesthetically.
Yeah. I mean, especially as a kid, that's the easiest thing to understand is the aesthetic part. But I don't know. The artist ego was huge for me because he would say stuff like, you know what, if you get in first, you know, to the school, you can set up and you can like put your giant paper cover the wall. You know, you can take up more than one spot, you know, because you got there first. You were the one, you know, who has the ego and the effort and you did all this. So you get to cause a hassle for the class
and claim your territory. It's so interesting because there are certain classes. I mean, would you say what has been more important, the formal aspect of the education or the like the conceptualizing meaning? And when I say formal, is like honing your technique.
Well, I definitely understand what you're saying. I think that when we say conceptual, you're kind of talking about the thinking part of like how it works. But I think even more important than that is like the artist part. So I would categorize it in three ways. I would have the technical, the conceptual, and also the like the soul of the artist, you know?
Okay.
So technical is obvious. The conceptual is like the signs and significations of all the, you know, things.
Would you say the conceptual, would you also consider that a narrative if someone is more of a storyteller?
Definitely.
Okay.
And then the artist's soul, and this is in terms of like the artist, right? The what makes up the talent, the yeah. body of the artist's mind. But that soul, like the drive, the like
the passion,
the want to experiment and create, and the ego, like I was talking about, like I think that was huge for me. Like it allows you to create,
giving yourself permission.
That was like exactly the words.
You know, it's interesting, and this brings back a memory. You had a show here called, I'll never forget, it was Something Strange Pistachio, I think.
It's abstract flavor, semicolon, pistachio.
Yes, that's what it was, the semicolon. And it's interesting, you had this huge painting, I'll never forget this. You had this, I think it was like 8 feet by 12 feet.
That's right, exactly the size.
And you had like this small, like hatchback of a car. And I was like, how is this guy delivering this giant painting in this little car? And it was amazing because you created these makeshift kind of panelings that then came together.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, like back then in the early days of doing shows here at MRG, it was like, whoa, it was like, I mean, and then we stretched the canvas. We had to stretch the canvas in the gallery. And it was amazing. I don't know how big that car was, but it was tiny.
It was a
tiny car. Do you still have that car?
No.
Okay. No, he doesn't have the car, but it was a very small car. And he somehow, managed to fit these giant, I think you even assembled some of the wood in here.
Yeah, no, that happened. It wasn't the most elegant solution, but I was just starting off. I was really in the infancy of my artistic ability, and I really wanted to go big.
Yeah. You know?
So I was like, I'm going to make a big canvas. I worked on it for, I think, a year out of high school, something like that. And then, on and off as it goes. And then I realized, you know, in order to transport this thing, there's no way I can stretch this. So I worked on it, just rock, canvas and then gesso. And then, I did build these three panels that not only could be assembled and disassembled quickly, but, had like brackets so that they could, hold together strong. And then I could stretch it pretty easily just to get it.
The solution today, I'm like, rent a truck.
Yeah. I mean, I'm now.
No, but it's interesting. Like, you know, those early times when you're just trying to, you've put in so much time and effort and hours, and it's like, you know, a lot of it's saving dollars and, and stuff like that. And it's interesting as I think artists become more mature in that they become more methodical of like, oh yeah, I don't go big for that reason or something. Like they just go like, yeah, you know, unless some person's paying me for a commission or there's a rhyme or reason. But it's interesting. Don't you find it interesting that like, now that could be a, like, you're not like artists could be not encouraged of doing something, just knowing the logistics of like, versus being fearless and just like, yeah, I'm just going to do this. I'm not really thinking about like, Because when I see artists like Damien Hirst or these big artists, and you see them going just crazy sizes.
So cool.
It's so cool. But then you go like, wow, they're really fortunate enough. Because like, where do you find a studio to house that? I mean, I couldn't even house those paintings at my gallery. They're so big. So it's just like, you know, you need to have the space to be able to work that large, let alone store it. I mean, how many paintings do you have in storage?
Oh my goodness.
It's not even a number.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't even think of the number.
Yeah. I mean, it's I don't have a lot of space, but it's all,
is it all rolled up?
No, I don't like to take them off the stretcher bar now.
Now it's more mature. It's like, yo.
Now we're more mature.
These masterworks need to keep their form.
Better material. I'm all about lastability now. So.
Oh, nice. That he's painting on linen, which lasts 800 years, guys. 800. That's what my artist has told me. I mean, I'm quoting one of my artists who's been doing it for a while. But so now you have a separate storage unit, or is it in your studio?
No, this is just in my studio.
Okay. He's like / apartment. Whatever. Yeah. It's okay. It's okay, guys. Yeah. Artists are allowed to live where, you know, they could work where they live.
Yeah. But to go back to your earlier point about, size and scale, I think that's still the ego thing, right? So I still give myself permission to work that big. So I did another 9-foot painting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that one actually can fit inside my roof, but I transported that to school when I needed to show it by hiring a big truck, you know?
Yeah.
So,
no, it's interesting. And your experience, like, it's interesting. I didn't know you were at Art Center, but Art Center, I feel like, you know, you really need the technical chops to like make it through their program, because they're heavily focused on the technique. I think so. Or you correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, especially in the illustration program, right? Yeah. So the fine art program is a little bit different, but in the illustration program,
a little bit more lenient. In the fine art,
yeah. In the illustration program, you definitely have to have those chops, and they cultivate that in you with like a year of technical skill, but. I mean, to be honest with you, most of the people that succeed come in with a certain level, and they develop quickly and get really good.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I think of every time when I think about who is the best illustrator, you know, Reed actually went to Art Center as well.
I know Reed. I saw him when he was there.
Yeah. Okay. So, dude, that guy, it took him like 10 times to get in, I think. I'm going to have him on the podcast and ask him to confirm.
Excellent.
But not to throw Reed under the bus, but it's interesting because, you know, he really wanted to go there.
Yeah. For a good reason. It was a great school. And he was doing well and happy when I was there. And
yeah.
He was just graduating when I found him. So I didn't go to Art Center directly out of school.
You went to Santa Monica Community College, right?
I went to Santa Monica Community College just to get some GEDs for a little bit. And then I also went to the School of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston to take a fine art degree program. That was my initial first choice.
Okay.
I kind of chose it for money a little bit, because I did get into a couple other schools like RISD and SFAI, but then I chose kind of based on money and...
Yeah, SFAI, they probably didn't give you a good financial aid package. Yeah. I know, because I had to pay my debts.
Well, they gave me a competitive one. So I actually used it to talk down the School of the Museum of Fine Arts.
That is so funny.
Yeah. But anyways, so I went there, but it was a fine art program and it turned out not to be a great fit. So I did end up leaving, and then I worked, you know, trying to make the fine art thing happen for myself for maybe a couple of years. And then I started at Art Center when I really.
Wow. So what was the break there? Because it's interesting. Most people that I know in the arts is when they leave art school, they leave, they don't go back. So coming back, how was that like going back into the school, kind of rubric? Cause I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, like, this is my view on sometimes on art school. It's like somewhat kind of bullshit, if you will, because like, no, because like they're not teaching you you still have to practice and do your art.
Of course.
You know, they're not teaching business classes or any of that in preparation to the real world. Mm-hmm. So the most important way to learn about art is by making art, trying things, doing things, experimenting. I think Loxa, going back to our high school, was so good at giving kind of the students the preparation, at least technically. Like, I learned a lot of technical skills.
Yeah.
Like, I learned about grids. I learned about different techniques and painting. I took classes that I didn't really want to take, like animation.
Yeah.
I took drawing, you know, certain stuff. I took ceramics. You know, I would have never been interested in ceramics if we didn't. And like, look how fortunate we were to even have a ceramics. Like, we had, like,
I know, my goodness.
Like, you know, some of the colleges are like, wait, you had ceramics? We don't even have like the facility for that. And then, funny enough, at Santa Monica, I attended there for a little bit. I took glass blowing.
Oh, that's super cool. I saw the class. I wanted it.
They would fight tooth and nail for that class. It was a mishap for me. So there's this like super desirable class called glass blowing at Santa Monica Community College. It was an elective. I guess chose that I didn't really know what I was choosing. I just like needed to pick something. And I didn't like the first day of class. Luckily I came on time, because if you don't come on time, they just drop you. And they had like 30 people waiting to see if people are going to get dropped.
Oh my God.
And I was like, 30 people are like, literally there's a line to wait to see if someone didn't come. I came on time and I was like, oh, cool. You know? So that was a really cool medium to experience with, for myself as a creative. But I want to talk about kind of what is it like in the life of an artist, and you would know better than me now, since you're fresh out of it, like coming out of school, coming into the real world, having you already gone through the real world and back.
Yeah.
So can you like tell me about these experiences you've been having, or the experience, I mean, during this pandemic as well?
Sure.
What is it like in the days of an artist, the real artist? It's a compliment.
Thank you. Well, there was a struggle to get back into school after coming out, right? So I was a little headstrong, to be honest, when I first came in, because I was like, you know what, I had this, you know, I was like, I was working in the real world. I know what an artist is, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I was a little bit resistant to some of my teachers at first, but, you know, you kind of, I think it took the first two semesters. Like the first semester, I was like, you know, fundamentals. Like I can do fundamentals, you know.
Yeah, I'm already doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And then it kind of like, I don't know, I guess I just softened up or something. And I was like, you know what, this is really good for me. Like I need this, you know.
I mean, learning's always good. I just.
Even though I have the skills, you know, just got to go farther.
Well, what did you learn then? What was new? What was refreshing about going back to school?
You would be so surprised how much I learned there. I have a teacher who's now a good friend of mine who always says that Art Center saved him. And I feel a similar way. It was fantastic. I learned new mediums. Like, so in Loxa, experimenting is everything. So sometimes having that kind of technical training at that age is too much. And it's more about like finding yourself, you know what I'm saying? So like not everyone who goes to Loxa ends up being an artist.
Most actually don't.
Yeah. But just having the experience of trying all these new things is like the most valuable part, you know, being able to take the animation, the ceramics class, like that's super cool, you know? And that's like, even if I wasn't an artist, I would be like, yeah, that's totally worth it, you know? But I ended up loving this and discovering it came kind of a similar way. I thought I was going to be an animator, but I discovered that painting is my thing. So, again, that was super important. So then going back into Art Center, having the technical training, like I said.
Well, it's interesting. So you went to Loxa, graduated, then you went to Boston?
That's right.
And then you took a break, you were in the art world, and then how many years later did you then go to Art Center after that?
So I was there for like 3-ish years. You can kind of take summers too. So I went pretty, I went almost straight through. I took a couple breaks because I just wanted some time to get my portfolio. But actually what I was saying earlier about what I was learning is mediums, like I said. So that was an important one, like watercolor. I never thought I would like watercolor. Watercolor is so hard. It is unforgiving. And I thought this was not for me. And then I took a couple classes with the legendary Jeff Smith. Oh my goodness. You know, I learned so much. And I really fell in love with it. I just couldn't believe it. And now watercolor is like my second medium behind oil.
Wow.
And it actually offers me a good respite from oil because I actually developed an oil allergy too, which is kind of an issue.
Wow, really?
Yeah. It's called a sensitivity to oil paint. I didn't know what was going on for the longest time. I mean, I didn't have the best painting practices. You know, I'd sleep in the room with
no good ventilation,
with terp, you know, and stuff like that, and horrible ventilation, you know, especially when it was like cold, you know, and I would just be like, no, screw it. I'm not.
Because you think you're going to be, you know, the crazy thing is, I know that feeling where you're just like, you know, you hear about it, but because you physically can't see it, you're just like, you could smell it, but you're just like, you know, get used to it.
Well, you know, I knew it was taking years off my life, but I was like, you know what? I mean, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
Burn twice as bright for half as long. So that was my plan. But I don't know. So I kept painting and painting, and I was getting to art center, and I was doing oil paintings, and I was just feeling terrible, and it was really crazy because I was like, what's even going on? So I started doing some snooping. I had an art materials class, which talked about the safety of art materials, which is, I feel like, sometimes even undertaught at the college level. You know, like you take an oil painting class, they don't tell you the exact specifics of all this stuff. You know, they say, you know,
I know certain oils are more toxic than one another too, like certain pigments.
Oh yeah. I know about that now.
Yeah. Now you're like, yo, you're talking to a professional. That yellow ochre, that burnt sienna. I still know a couple of my colors. No, that's very interesting. You know, I think it's interesting for me coming from the distributing side of things, running an art gallery, managing talents and stuff, and having a background in the production of the things. It's crazy how much an artist in today's world has to juggle aside from also creating the product, creating the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to wear multiple hats. You're trying to find a representative. You're trying to find, you know, someone who could work with you. And then it's crazy. You know, you talk about watercolors, and I have like artists come to me like, oh, should I be doing like drawings, or should I not be doing drawings or watercolors because they don't fetch as much money.
Yeah.
So you don't even use the medium because you're like, oh, it's perceived as less. And that's kind of so sad because the romantic kind of relationship people should have with art, I think, is like the relationship an artist has with the medium, meaning you're using watercolor because it can give you, you can portray that type of feel with it. It's not going to do what oil's doing. It's not going to do what acrylic's doing, and the way the paint moves, the fluidity of it. And it's so funny, some of these conversations, the conversation I'm having with you right now, some people, they'll look at that conversation and they'll be like, oh, that's very she-she. You know, it's like, oh, that's highfalutin art.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a beautiful balance. Like in that highfalutin aspect of art, I see it like poetry. I'm not sure, do you see it the same way? I mean, maybe I got too lost into art school, but that's the way I see it.
No, I mean, I feel a similar way. I think that you should be... I feel like an artist should be making in whatever medium they want to be, you know, making in. They shouldn't really be considering the financial aspect, except to the point where money is freedom of the brain, you know, so that you can do what you want. And that's for me, that's what it is.
How do you as an artist determine your value?
I guess, you know, we have to go to the yogis, and self-worth comes from within. At some level, the artist ego happens for me in that, you know, in that regard. Like I give myself the value more than I know that I actually have. You know, I think I'm better than I am so that I can keep going. I have a certain amount of pride in what I do generally, you know, but I, you know, got to give yourself a little extra to give yourself the permission and stuff.
But financially, how do you think about it? And so it's interesting because I had an artist here on another podcast and I broke down some numbers to him on some paintings. So when you create a painting, when you're done with a painting, mm-hmm. do you then ask like a gallerist, do you ask someone else what the value is, or do you have a number in mind after you've created it?
Well,
in some shape or capacity. I'd be curious your answer because I've heard an answer from another artist and it was interesting how he answered. So,
well, mine's a very logical explanation. I know I'm a starting out. I know I'm starting my career, you know, officially after coming out of Art Center. So I know my prices are based on that. So I take like, you know, a starting artist's number, and that's kind of what I assign it. I go based on size and
medium. Do you go based off like you look in like what other artists that have similar aesthetic and say, okay, this guy is getting this much, so I'm going to price it like that?
A little bit, but also no, because there are artists who I think are, you know, way better than me, and I'm not going to like, well, there's artists who are making more money than me that I think maybe, you know, don't deserve to be making that much money, but I'm not going to price my stuff higher than them because of, you know, how the art market works and the establishment and stuff. So I have to price lower. I have to price at the starting artist salary, regardless of how good I think my work is or how good it actually is in reality.
it's amazing because like, look, this is what I do for a living, yeah. You know? And it's like, I have to determine values and people ask me the question, like, how did you come to that value?
Yeah.
And it's amazing because one of my, dear artist, he had passed away. His name was Kalman Aaron. He was like 94 years old. Mm-hmm. And this is a saying by Picasso or some famous artist, but he reiterated it to me. And there was a collector that I brought in and he was looking, most of the paintings were in 30, 40, 50,000 range. And there was a drawing. He said, he was looking, how much is that drawing? And he was like, $10,000. And the collector was like, $10,000? Like, why is that $10,000? Like, that's crazy. He's like, how long did it take you? And he answered and he said, it took me 94 years.
Yep.
And he said, no, it didn't. And he said, no, it took me 94 years to do it in 5 minutes so effortlessly.
Yeah.
And you think about that and it's like, okay, the guy is older, so his value's more, but it's interesting that you say your starting point as a starting artist, because I don't see you as a starting artist. You've been doing art since Loxa, since those days. That's what now, what, I don't know how many years, but
true.
You know, it's very fascinating because the last guy who I asked, his name's Bergen, shout out to Bergen. He said, I have an expensive living. And to maintain my expensive living, that's how I change. That's how I charge towards my, like, I'm entitled to live a decent life. And he doesn't live an extravagant life. He was like, I drive a Toyota Corolla. Like, I'm not like, you know, bougie out here, but who says like, you're not deserving of like nice things or want nice things, you know, you should want to have those nice things or whatever you value.
Agreed.
And it's interesting. We were talking about numbers and I was like, and I'm going to ask you the same question. How many masterworks do you make a year?
Masterworks,
like works that you're like you're really proud in your eyes, like they're I call them masterworks because like, you know, polished well works, you could say. Now look, I understand no artist is ever proud of their work, but
I would disagree. It's always the recent one. I'm always in love with it.
Okay, the recent one. But how many of them are created a year?
See, that depends too,
approximately.
Oil paintings take time, but I can turn out watercolors quickly. I'm not the fastest, but I'd say I could turn 100, maybe 150 comfortably.
A year?
Yeah. I know people that can turn like 300, but like, I mean, watercolor's quick and I can't.
Well, no, I'm not talking about little. I'm talking about like,
you're talking about oil paintings.
I'm talking about paintings that you're like, this is what I'm going to be remembered when I die.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Like they're going to study this stuff. Masterworks. Oh, okay. Cause I'm not talking about like small watercolors. Yeah. I know there was an artist we went to school with, Lachlan. He probably turned out 5,000 in his Loxa career. Maybe he'll be on the podcast too. I don't know. Oil paintings that, you know.
Okay. Maybe 20. If I, that's being generous too.
Being generous. Okay. So let's say it is 20.
Yeah.
20 works and you sold. What do you think? What is the last sale for a painting?
Like my final one when I'm dead?
No. The last price you got on an oil painting.
Like 2000?
Like 2000, right? You sell all 20, right? You sell all 20 of them.
Yeah.
That's 40 grand.
Oh yeah. Big bucks.
No,
I know that's not very much.
No, but is that like a living wage? Not really. Not here in California.
No.
It's not.
No.
So that's the interesting thing to me about like pricing art, you know. I have a fiduciary responsibility as a gallerist, as a distributor, to make sure like the deal is, we all want a deal that is worth it for everyone. And a lot of times we don't think about like, you know, the expense, the time. You're not getting paid for oil to sit and dry, go back in at midnight and work on that layer.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very fascinating. And I encourage all artists to like really think about, and I liked Bergen's answer, like the type of quality of life you want to live and charge according to that. Because you're not telling a CEO of a big company like, hey, you know, you can't have that yacht. He's like, no, that's coming in my bonus. Like, that's going to happen. So it's very fascinating to hear your take on that. And hopefully you'll give yourself more value in that sense. But I think, you know, the amazing part about it is I think, you're very conscious by like, I feel like part of who you are, because I have like kind of the insight of knowing you longer. Like,
yeah.
I feel you do want people to have accessibility to your work as well.
That's true. Yeah. Know, that, like, that's an important part.
That's like such a compliment when someone's like, they have your work, they buy your work.
Yeah. I think that's really sweet. But at the same time, I know that like, the way that value works is based on reputation and renown, and I don't have that yet.
Well, it's interesting. I learned something early on in the business where someone said perception is deception. And I was like,
yeah, that's one too.
Like the perception of something. I was just talking to a buddy of mine the other night, and it's amazing because here in LA, you know, you see a lot of nice things and stuff, and you really don't know the narrative behind people.
It's true.
Like you just never know. Like you could see a guy in a really fancy car. I know this from running a nightclub, and you think he's like has a lot of money. He doesn't have anything. And I saw that plenty of times in the night world, meaning they'll get a rental, they'll get a lease, whatever they can to kind of look it, be perceived as it. But, you know, in reality, they don't have it. So what have you been working on? What's the recent body of work you've been working on looking at during this pandemic? What are the subject matters? Let's try and paint the picture, if you will.
All right.
We'll be able to share his link and stuff, and you'll be able to look at it on his website.
Thank you.
Towards the end. But let's try and paint it with our words.
Right. So, I had a couple... I work kind of between series. So sometimes I have a bunch of different ideas, and I'm going to say strings of work, different modes of working that I like to work in. So sometimes it's full abstraction, and sometimes it's like semi-abstract, you know, figurative. And then sometimes I just like full figurative. So, but one of those strings for me lately has kind of been about death and oblivion and identity. And that one's kind of a big one for me. So that's kind of followed me throughout my life, just in my internal dialogue. And I wanted to bring that to the canvas because I hadn't in my 24 years of living. I'm 25 now, but that's when I started doing these paintings. And I was trying to convey the dread a little bit, like the existential dread, like the fear of death, the oblivion, the sense of loss of identity. That's like the big one, the loss of identity.
The loss of identity, okay.
In death. And so I tried to make these like holes in the canvas visually that could kind of represent for us, you know, when you're looking at it, like a visual discomfort that is sort of, you know, it'll get you into the headspace of like something is kind of going wrong here. Like the composition is kind of skewed, wonky, you know, like there's things happening here that's not making me comfortable, you know? And that with the subject matter and the painting style, the techniques, the color choices, all that have tried to add up to these concepts. And I've just kind of been like working through it. So,
do you work on pieces individually initially, or do you think of your body of work as a series?
I tend to just keep going individually, but I have worked in series before. So,
cause for me, I know going into, if I'm tackling a body of work, I know it's going to be in a series, meaning it's almost like, I know I'm going to say too much and that's why I need to have to disperse because, and I think we've all done this as artists where you just overwork a painting.
Oh yeah, totally.
Like, you know, there'll be this thing and you'll see like this brilliant moment in the painting. It'll be like, I need to achieve that all over, but then it's not the painting. If it's all over, you need that brilliant moment. Like one time, mm-hmm. It's that weird kind of, is this painting at the level we want to see it? And that's why I've gravitated personally thinking of works in series in that sense. Like,
yeah,
I'm doing a series, I'm trying to talk about something, or I guess back then they would call them periods. Like Picasso had his blue period,
yeah,
his cubism and stuff like that. It's very interesting. So you go at it primarily as you tackle the work individually, though.
This is going to sound really romantic. I do it in kind of how I feel, you know, like what ideas are resonating within my,
in that moment,
in my body going into it. So I'll be like, you know what? I've been thinking a lot about like death and identity. I'm going to go with that. I have,
and channel that.
Yeah. I'll start some sketches and then I'll work, you know.
Okay. That's really interesting. The process. So do you initially do a preliminary like type of sketch drawing before you tackle what I like to call a masterwork?
Well, Art Center has really taught me to get into a process. I've kept it. So it is preliminary sketches, you know, and then we'll work into like finished sketches, you know, and these, I'm talking about drawings that are like fully fleshed out.
And has that helped in terms, cause like, you know, there's all these rules when you're taught some formality in art, like, you know, don't work from a white canvas, prime the thing, you know, like, and it's amazing because I have some artists who've been doing it a while. Like, mm-hmm. One of my star artists, Robert Tannenbaum, like he works from like a white canvas. He don't care. Like,
yeah.
Like, and I'm like, wow. Like, but you know, I know working from like a gray canvas is just easier.
Yeah.
It is easier, you know, so do you like follow those processes?
Well, here, let me tell you what's going on. So with a actual painting that I'm doing, I tend to do the sketches, do the finished sketch, and then I'll start to work. I'll transfer the sketch to a canvas, either
via grid,
which I tend to do, or I can just project it on because I have a projector. Yeah. Especially if I do a really,
you don't do the old school transfers with the graphite, too messy.
No, that's rough.
I learned that from Dahlberg's class. Oh, no, yeah. Joke.
Yeah.
Did you have him? Justin Dahlberg?
I think I did, but I don't know. I can't really remember.
He was a tough guy, tough professor.
I mean,
I know from The Gift of Love, I submitted, this was a book we got to submit our work to.
Oh, that's
to.
Right. I remember that.
I submitted his work because I knew it was like the best work I created. I was like, yo, if there was someone who pushed me in my artistic endeavors, it was him. So it's interesting. So you take a very formal then process by doing all that.
Well, then I paint over it with acrylic so I can seal the drawing. And just in case if I want to wipe off the oil, I can go back to the drawing anytime.
Interesting.
And then I put the
like
oil
a clear
down.
Coat?
I just do a really wash.
White gesso?
No. Just a wash of acrylic. So I'll actually paint it in acrylic, but really washy, right? So,
wait. You paint the drawing. Like, do you go, does graphite hit the canvas?
Yeah. So I build my own canvases now, by the way. So I stretch the linen.
Linen, yes.
And then I will gesso it myself. And then I will draw directly on the canvas with the graphite. And then I'll put the wash of acrylic on, which again seals the drawing, and I'm using the colors.
So that wash, is that wash? Because when I think about gesso, most people think of white. I know they have clear gesso. Is it a clear based gesso? Or is it just a very faint white wash gesso?
So my white gesso right after I stretch the canvas is opaque and white. And then when I'm doing the acrylic wash, it's not gesso. It's just acrylic paint that I'm washing
on. Oh, okay. It's acrylic paint. So it seals it in there.
Yeah. And I'm using the colors that I would paint over. So it's not a white canvas when I'm working this way.
Got it.
When I'm working from a model, like a live model, live painting, I'll work on a white canvas. If I'm going out and landscape painting, same thing, just straight to white.
Wow.
I'm used to it. It doesn't bother me too much. I don't know.
You know, the interesting thing, I think, why it was so helpful, and this is for the listeners, to like not work from a white canvas is because when you're working with a white canvas and there's going to be a lot of color, the way it was explained to me is you wouldn't want that white to seep through. And it's very easy for like, it's hard to put enough paint on a canvas where you're actually covering the canvas.
Yeah.
So by like covering it a certain tone, that white, you can eliminate that aspect versus like a gray or something else would hide. But if you're working from a black, some people work from like dark to light. That's another reason to do it. I found that very challenging unless you're working with charcoal.
I work dark to light.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. With my paintings, I do it.
Interesting. Do you find that the whites pop more when you do that? We're getting real technical, right?
No, no, that's just how I got taught to paint. One of the big inspiration, well, one of the big teachers for me was Sean Cheatham, and he and he works like that. I adopted his palette for the most part, and I've made a couple changes since then, and I'm sure I will as I keep painting. But yeah, he works dark to light. His whole painting style is to get it right the first time, you know?
Which almost never happens.
You'd be surprised.
With him, he gets it right.
He's very good. And, but again, so it's getting it right. It's blocking out color shapes. So it's about shape design a lot with this painting. Steps where you work in steps, and then you can blend it out and then make touch-ups, you know, after. And so that's the way I work too.
Very cool. Well, we're out of time, which we're going to have a second part with Alex Kupchak. That way you'll have to tune into the second episode of Alex. Can you give the audience, where can we find the amazing work we're talking about? What's your website? He has a new awesome website.
Thank you. It's alexkupchak.com. So that's spelled K-U-P-C-Z-Y-K because it's a Polish name. You know.
Spell it one more time because it's a tough name to spell.
Yeah, Alex, K-U-P-C-Z-Y-K.
Very cool. Well, I'm looking for it. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Please indulge in our next episode. We'll probably have Alex on again. We will. So you guys could hear more about his work and see it and enjoy it. Thank you so much for tuning into the Art Matcher podcast. We had an interesting discussion, a great time, and we hope you did too. Please tune in for next week's episode and like, share, and follow. For more information about the app, you can check out our website at artmatcher.com or look us up on social. Stay safe and be artful.